Hi, this is Pastor Greg, and you're listening to Chosen Generation Radio. Get more at ChosenGenerationRadio.com. That's Chosen Generation Radio, where no topic is off limits and everything filtered through biblical glass.
My passion is the fight for freedom. My father fought for World War II defending our country. Today, we are no longer fighting with guns. Instead, we are fighting an ideological battle for control of our country by contributing to causes that support your constitutional rights. I am Patriot Mobile.
I thank and praise God for this borewell that God has enabled us to put in this village with the prayer and support of Pastor Greg Young and Chosen Generation Radio Ministry. And by the prayer and support of the Pastor Greg Young and Chosen Generation Ministry, we could put the borewell in this village for the community. Before, this community was drinking dirty water, and that was really causing a lot of sickness. But now they are getting pure and fresh water, and all the community is so thankful for Pastor Greg Young and Chosen Generation Ministry and all the supporters. And we pray for all of you that God would bless you and God would use you so that we can put more and more borewells in a poor and a needy community, those who are really having a problem of the water. And this is this borewell we have put, and pure and fresh water is coming, and we are so thankful for all of you. Especially we thank to Pastor Greg Young and Chosen Generation Ministry that help us and support us to put the borewell. Thank you. God bless you.
Hi, I'm Tim Sheff, a certified natural health practitioner of over 40 years. I want to introduce you to a product that changed my life. The product's called Vibe, available at cgrwellness.com. I thought I was on a good nutritional program before I discovered Vibe. I was taking the traditional vitamin and mineral tablets, wasn't really feeling any different. So I tried Vibe. Vibe is an all-in-one vitamin and mineral supplement. It's a liquid multivitamin. It's cold-pressed, whole-food sourced, non-radiated, gluten-free, and has no pasteurization. Vibe is like fresh juicing without all the work. It supports four areas of the body: cardiovascular health, immune health, anti-aging, and healthy cell replication. Vibe is available in a 32-ounce bottle for home use or a very handy 1-ounce travel packet for life on the go. The first time I tried Vibe, I had more energy in about 20 minutes. I started thinking clear. Even believe I slept better. Get yours today at cgrwellness.com. Coupon code ChosenGenRadio at checkout and receive $20 off your first order of $50 or more. That's cgrwellness.com. Coupon code ChosenGenRadio. Get yours today.
These statements have not been evaluated by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. Neither products do not treat, reduce, cure, or prevent disease.
Welcome to Chosen Generation with your host, Pastor Greg Young.
But you are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a peculiar people, that you should shew forth the praises of Him who has called you out of darkness into His marvelous light, which in time past were not a people, but are now the people of God, which had not obtained mercy, but now have obtained mercy.
And now, Chosen Generation, where no topic is off limits and everything is filtered through biblical glasses. And now, here's your host, Pastor Greg.
Good morning and welcome to the program. Great to have you with me. Thanks so much for being here. I know you have a choice of where you can listen each and every day, and I thank you for keeping it tuned here to Chosen Generation Radio. I've got a great program lined up for you today. Bottom of hour number three, Reverend Clenard Childress Jr., blackgenocide.org. If you've never looked at that website before, you really need to. The statistics are stunning when it comes to how the abortion agenda has targeted black Americans. It's horrific, horrific. And, of course, it continues across red, brown, yellow, black, white, doesn't matter. They're after the unborn, and now we see they're after the children as well. So we'll have that coming up for you. Michael Morris will be joining us this morning. We'll be talking about censor track, also fake news, what they're not telling you, and why. What's the deal there? Claire Lopez joins us, our national security expert, along with my co-host Rick Manning, to talk about what's happening in Russia and to give her insight into the upheaval that's happening there. And we're going to stay on top of that story Valerie Kirilenko will be on with me next week to discuss this as well. And I'm looking forward to these conversations with my Russian background as a Russian linguist and the things that I was exposed to through my training and so on. I'm just very interested. I've been following this for years. Let's see. What else do we have? Next hour, we have a couple of special guests that are going to be joining us. And hang on, I had all that information right up here in front of me, right at my fingertips, and now my calendar seems to have skipped. There we go. So also, Chadwick Moore will be with us. He is the author of the new book, Tucker. And so we'll be talking about Tucker Carlson, his impact on media, what it meant for him to get moved off of Fox, and where's that headed, and just how he's been really a disruptive force to MSM and even to the faux conservative networks. So we'll talk about that with Chadwick coming up. David Shostokos will be joining me here any moment now, but I want to talk to you about these products right back here on my shelf. And I want you to know that they're top-notch. I'm getting constant reports from folks about how they are helping make them feel better. They're just improving their health. They've improved my health dramatically, and I really sincerely encourage you to get over to CGRwellness.com. I talk to folks all the time. I'm struggling with this particular issue or that particular issue. And I'm telling you, these products do make a difference. Now, I also use a detox product called Root, and I strongly recommend that too. You can get that at CGR4Life.com. And that's Clean Slate is that product, that detox product. And it works. And the two work so well in conjunction with one another. If you'd like to know all of the things that I am personally taking, there's about seven products that I take, eight products that I take every single day. Vibe, Resvante, Ultra Shot, which covers my B vitamins, by the way. Flex, the glucosamine combination. The cell ready, which is what I take at night, which is your minerals, give your body that to work on. I take the apple cider vinegar gummies and the ashwagandha gummies, and then I take the omega-3, and I take that four times a day. And it really, truly, honestly is making a gigantic difference for me. You got to remember where I come from, you know, physically. I died four times. My situation is as a nurse, at the head of nursing for Galen Nursing in San Antonio said when she looked at my file and then introduced me to her nursing class, she introduced me as the only living conniver that her nursing students would ever meet. I had a gentleman in my home who marched with Patton. He was in World War II. He was then in the Korean War, and then he was in the Colombian drug wars, working as a chaplain and ministering down there in Colombia during that time. Went through the tents of the injured and so on. Said in all his years, 90-plus years, never heard of anybody that survived all of the injuries that I had. I had a gentleman who was a captain in a forward medical unit in Afghanistan who treated, this was a triage unit, and he looked at my testimony and he said, "My goodness, you're three dead soldiers." My point is that if this stuff can help me get to the place that I'm at, imagine the difference that it could make in your life, because I'm almost 100% certain that there's not going to be but maybe two people that'll ever listen to this program that are going to have anywhere near the challenges that I've faced. And I don't say that like I'm bragging about a badge of honor. I'm just saying that, folks, honestly, this stuff will really help you. My mom, 86 years old, had her legs were all swollen up. They were talking about different surgeries. They were trying to figure out how to help her. She started on Vibe. Within 3 days, all the swelling in her legs are down. She called me the other day. She said, honey, you got to order more product for me. I said, why, Mom? She said, because every morning everybody's showing up. There's a line of people at my door from my apartment complex of people that are coming over to take a shot of that Vibe. They're showing up every day. So my 90-year-old aunt is now on this. My cousin is on this. I'm telling you, this stuff works. CGRwellness.com. CGRwellness.com. I'm going to take just a couple of minutes. I want to show you this video, give you this explanation. This is how you sign up for it. It's a free to sign up. But there is, you do need to navigate a couple of windows that are going to pop up on you. And I don't want you to get lost in the mix. So here we go. And then David Shostokos will be joining us. We'll be talking about SCOTUS decisions right after this.
Hi, I'm Tim Sheff, a certified natural health practitioner of over 40 years. I want to introduce you to a product that changed my life. The product's called Vibe, available at CGRwellness.com. I thought I was on a good nutritional program before I discovered Vibe. I was taking the traditional vitamin and mineral tablets, wasn't really feeling any different. So I tried Vibe. Vibe is an all-in-one vitamin and mineral supplement. It's a liquid multivitamin. It's cold-pressed, whole-food sourced, non-radiated, gluten-free, and has no pasteurization. Vibe is like fresh juicing without all the work. It supports four areas of the body: cardiovascular health, immune health, anti-aging, and healthy cell replication. Vibe is available in a 32-ounce bottle for home use or a very handy 1-ounce travel packet for life on the go. The first time I tried Vibe, I had more energy in about 20 minutes. I started thinking clear. Even believe I slept better. Get yours today at CGRwellness.com. Coupon code ChosenGenRadio at checkout and receive $20 off your first order of $50 or more. That's CGRwellness.com. Coupon code ChosenGenRadio. Get yours today.
These statements have not been evaluated by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. Any of the products do not treat, reduce, cure, or prevent disease.
Hey, this is Pastor Greg. I just want to take a minute to walk you through how to sign up at CGR Wellness. So you're going to type in www.cgrwellness.com. And that is going to take you over here. And the first thing you're going to do is you're going to come over here and you are going to, we're going to shrink this down so it doesn't get in our way. You're going to go right over here to create account. And it is going to offer you the opportunity to create an account. You've got to type in an email address. So we're going to type in an email address. Good if I put a good one in there, right? There we go. And now there is a window that pops up. Now, when this window pops up, here's what you need to do. You need to just X out. Just close that window. Okay? Just close that window. Now we go over here. And we'll use a strong password. And then we'll put in our name. And we'll put in our last name. And then we'll put in an address. And the city. And we'll choose our state. And we don't need a phone number. And it wants us to make sure that we're not a robot, so we'll do that. Wow. And we'll create the account. And now the account's been created. Now, there is a share code. I don't remember what it is right now, but it doesn't really matter. Now you'd go over here and type in Vibe. It's your first product you're looking for. And there is the fruit and veggies, superfood liquid multivitamin. Click on that. And you're going to order, I recommend that you order two, and I'll tell you why. If you order two of them and add those to the cart, now here comes the cart. Now, you're going to get your second bottle for half off when you type in Chosen Gen Radio. Chosen Gen Radio, and click apply. And that's going to give you $20 off. Plus, you're going to unlock free shipping. So now when you get your order, you'll get no shipping charge, 2 months worth for the price of a month and a half. And then you can go back over and you can securely check out, put in your billing information and so on, and you're off to the races. So that's how you do it. Nice and easy. Again, cgrwellness.com. When that little window pops up, just X out of it. You don't need that because you're going to get a $20 discount. Once you completed the form and created the account, go to the top, click in Vibe, and then go. Now, I use Vibe, Resvante, Ultra Shot, the EPA fish oil, the Flex, and I also use, this is your apple cider vinegar. And this is your ashwagandha. I use those as well. I'm going to run through this really quick with you. Again, omega-3. And then these products up here. Your Vibe. Your Resvante. The Ultra Shot. And the Flex. Those are the ones that I personally use every single day. I can recommend each and every one of those to you and just assure you that they do a great job. They've made a gigantic difference in my health. All right. God bless you. God bless your health. And thank you for supporting our Indian ministry through this as well. And welcome back to Chosen Generation Radio, where no topics off limits and everything filtered through biblical glasses. Again, I hope that you'll get over to cgrwellness.com, follow those instructions, and place your initial order. And I was talking with someone the other day, you know, if you're looking for vitamin B, if you're concerned about anti-aging, legitimately, look up Resvante on the site. After you get signed up at CGR Wellness, look up the Resvante. Cleveland Clinic has the documented evidence that shows the activation in your body of what this Resvante does because of the high level of resveratrol that's in it. It's the most concentrated level on the market, and it makes a difference. So just encourage you, think about your health. And then know that by changing your health pattern, you're also changing the health pattern of our friends in India. All right. Joining me now is, and he's with me here on Wednesdays. Very pleased to have him with me. I want to welcome to the program my good friend, David Shostokas. David, welcome. Good to have you.
Thanks so much, Greg. It's great to be with you. I'm glad to do this each and every Wednesday. It lets me know the week's half over. lets me know I'm rolling toward the weekend.
You're getting over the hump. That's the deal. Yeah,
exactly.
There you go.
Exactly.
Getting over the hump. No doubt. No doubt. Yeah. Well, and so there's a lot that's going to be happening with SCOTUS. We're going to get into that this morning. There was a decision that came out late yesterday, a 6-3 decision that the Supreme Court did, having to do with the issue of the state courts and the state legislatures and federal elections. Why don't you go ahead and give us your analysis on that? And then you and I were talking a little bit about that in the green room, and I really want to pursue that conversation with you here.
Sure, absolutely. There's been a relatively new theory in terms of it being so expansive that the state legislatures, because of the authority granted to them by the United States Constitution in terms of time, place, and manner regulations of federal elections, that because their authority for that is derived from the United States Constitution, that state courts do not have anything to say about what a state legislature does. That's the most expansive reading of that authority and that theory, that there's an independent state legislature authority that's derived from someplace other than just the state constitution, and consequently state courts are very limited in what they can do or say about how state legislatures regulate federal elections. And yesterday the Supreme Court said, no, state courts can, to the extent that they are enforcing state constitutional law, can oversee or provide oversight to the state legislature and see to it that, in fact, they follow the law of the state constitution in terms of regulating and the time, place, and manner activities of the conduct of a federal election. And it's actually kind of been a relatively new theory. It's that's been put forward in the last few years, and the United States Supreme Court actually did say that the state judiciary has a role in regulating oversight of the legislatures when it comes to regulating federal elections, to the extent that if the state legislature were to violate the state constitution in the course of its regulation, they would still have authority to do so. And so while there's people that are saying this is wrong, they don't believe it. It actually was a relatively novel theory. My take on the exclusivity or the plenary authority of the state legislature when it comes to the regulation of federal elections, it seems to me that because there's a specific clause that says the state legislatures have the authority to choose presidential electors, that they have a plenary authority when it comes to choosing presidential electors. But when it comes to other aspects of elections, state courts do have a role. That's my view of it, and I agree with the majority there.
So let me ask you just a couple of questions. State judges, I know in a lot of states, state judges, if I'm not mistaken, there is an election to elect a state judge. But all state judges are not necessarily elected. Some states appoint. I get Abbott's press releases, okay, and it seems to me that he has appointed judges in certain instances.
There's a mix of systems throughout the country on that. Even in some states where states at the trial level may be elected, and then judges at the appellate level may be appointed. Or when there's vacancies, there's situations where the governors can fill vacancies pending an election. There's a a patchwork of selection processes around the country.
So the reason for me asking that question is, and you and I have talked about powers and rights, states' powers, people's rights, and how that relates to the government. The state legislatures are the closest, the very closest thing to the will of the people.
That's how they're designed.
Why? No. Hey, listen, I'm watching it. We fought it in California for 18 plus years, and I get to Texas thinking that, you know, we're going to be cool, and not so much. But theoretically, that's the deal. The deal is that's the closest level that the people have is their state legislature. Then it moves up through the state ranks, and then you have your relationship to Congress, and again, the House being the closest, Senate was supposed to protect states' rights, that got blown up by the 17th Amendment. Anyway, I don't want to go too far into the litany of all of that, but my question, or my thinking on this is, was the purpose of trying to give these legislatures more, you know, more of their what would seem to be natural proclivity to defend the will of the people when it comes to an election? Because federal elections impact us. People may say, oh, well, no, we're just going to talk about state elections. Well, you can't, because what they're doing up there, I mean, look at Obergefell.
Yeah.
You still got over 30 states in this country that have a constitutional amendment that says marriage is between a man and a woman and anything else is illegal. And not one single attorney general in the entire country, not a governor, not a state legislature, nobody is standing on their own damn constitution.
Well, that's got to do with the interplay of the Federal Supremacy Clause.
Which is another reason why state legislatures need to have control over, because that you just touched on it. All of that federal stuff is whoever is in those offices is making those decisions. And unless we have a direct ability to influence those elections, pardon me, but we're screwed.
It's not saying that we don't have the ability to influence the elections. This decision is yesterday doesn't say that it doesn't take away the people's ability to influence those elections. What it does say is that if, in fact, the state legislature were to do something in terms of regulating the election that ran afoul of the state constitution, the state judges still have the ability and say to interpret the state constitution. And in fact, that's kind of a long-standing tradition that if a state judiciary interprets a state law or a state constitution, that interpretation outweighs the federal interpretation. The federal judges defer to state courts when it comes to saying what state law is. And so this is not out of line with what the tradition is. And so I'm just really surprised. So because it has to do with balancing and actually its limits on the authority of the federal judiciary in terms of saying what state constitutions have to say.
So why would Alito and Gorsuch and Thomas dissent, do you think?
I think that perhaps they don't trust state judges, and they might not be the only ones.
Is it possible that they just don't trust the judiciary at this point? Since there's been a lot of activism, and at the judicial level when it comes to a lot of these kinds of situations, both in state courts and federal.
I think there's a real possibility. I lived through that in Pennsylvania. The Pennsylvania Supreme Court usurped everybody's authority.
Yep.
the course of the 2020 election. It was issuing orders left and right that had nothing to do with election law. It had election law that was, but they were issuing orders that said you didn't have to verify signatures, even though the law was quite clear.
But
saying that you had to verify signatures.
So there's a perfect example. You have a state court, state Supreme Court, whatever, but it's still a state court that is literally issuing directives that are in violation of the Constitution, and the legislature can't, their hands are tied, they're bound, they don't have the power or the authority to overturn what was clearly an unconstitutional decision by the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. I mean, that's an issue.
It's an absolute issue. And there's that, but historically there's a mechanism for that. When you talk about it being clearly unconstitutional, historically there should be a mechanism to appeal the Pennsylvania Supreme Court to the federal courts when it's out in violation of the Constitution. So there's,
yeah,
there's
like, let's trust those federal court judges, because by gum, they're on track. All right. Well, you know what? We could probably both become red in the face, not arguing our points, but in frustration over how broken the system is. I think at the end of the day, that's the issue is the system is broke. All right. Let's move to SCOTUS. And talk about some of these decisions that are coming up and some of the things that that they're looking at. Now, let's see. I just saw here they by a vote of 7-2, the justices ruled that state courts had applied the wrong test to determine whether Counterman's statement was true threats. This is regarding Billy Raymond Counterman, a Colorado man who was sentenced to 4.5 years for stalking based on his Facebook messages. Did you see anything about that?
I have not.
Okay. We might want to table that one. It's interesting. So it says, justice throw out Colorado man stalking conviction in First Amendment dispute. That appears interesting to me. All right. So hang on. I've got it up here. Okay, here we go. So we've got an affirmative action case at the college. This has to do with Asian American students and their inability to be able to get into higher education because basically of affirmative action types of determinations that favor one minority group over all other minority groups. Your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I think there's a fair probability that they're going to back off from something that's been the Supreme Court law, Supreme Court position since a case in the late 70s, early 80s, Bakke versus California, that allows for the utilization of race in admission decisions. And I think maybe there's a chance that we'll get to where we should be. That is that people will be judged by the content of their character, not the color of their skin. I think that would be, it would be a wonderful thing, because on the whole, these kinds of programs that are where they say they're designed to overcome past discrimination, replace it with a different discrimination. And so I think there's a fair probability that the plaintiffs in this case are going to make some progress in having people in returning America to a meritocracy. That is where people would be judged by their success, where you wouldn't have to check a box and say what color and race you are. It's divisive to make you check such a box, as far as I'm concerned. They go back to that. It looks like there's a real probability. They certainly had no fear in terms of getting rid of Roe, and so if they back off of Bakke, it would be a wonderful thing for the country and a step in the right direction.
All right, student loan relief is also on the agenda, and it looks like they might render a decision with regards to this situation. Again, not, you know, and I actually had a gentleman that was on who was talking about that, you know, that this whole concept is, it's really counterintuitive to our way of life, for these, for, you know, to have this just free education per se. Obviously, we need to bring costs under control, and I think that we are a bit out of control.
Well, from the policy standpoint, my feeling is if they got out of student loan business, then the costs would come down, because the education system is just puts itself together to soak up the money that becomes available.
Yeah.
But that's actually a different policy question from the matter that's before the Supreme Court. Apparently, the matter before the Supreme Court is whether the president has the authority unilaterally to do anything about the student loan situation without an act of Congress. And it's pretty clear that the president does not have such authority. And I fully well expect the court will in fact say the president doesn't have such authority, that if the Congress wanted to do that and pass a law that would give people the some sort of what they call relief,
yeah,
that would be a separate subject. The issue is whether the president has the authority to act unilaterally in this instance, and it's pretty clear he does not.
I was looking for, the reason for those of you watching, okay, come on, chair. I got a wheel that doesn't like to turn in the front, so it gets sideways and then it blocks me from rolling forward.
Well, we're going to call Thomas Jefferson about that. He's the guy that invented swivel chairs, we know, so.
Well, there you go. I'll put him on speed dial here. Yes. No, I was looking for, I had a guest on, it's been a while, but I had a guest on that was talking about, you know, basically why you don't need to spend, you know, $125,000 to send your kid to college. And the book has a whole ton of options for, you know, career choices that don't involve that don't involve, you know, going to college, that you know, give you, whether it's mentoring or vocational schools or what have you, but opportunities that are outside of that particular path, if you will. That is also legitimate. I mean, everybody is not in a place where, you know, they can. And right now, honestly, and you and I think you and I would agree that right now colleges are indoctrination centers. They're not education centers. They're not preparing. Well,
that's a whole separate thing. But what you wind up with student loans, where the government is guaranteeing them, is a subsidy,
right,
from the government for schools. And then the schools just raise the prices to soak up the subsidy.
Yeah.
It's really simple. You want to bring it under, you want to bring the cost under control, get rid of the subsidies,
yeah,
and then the money will go away and they'll have to lower the price.
We talked about that yesterday with Dr. Carol Hornsby Haynes, you know, about school budgets too. I sat on the school site council and I remember sitting there and the principal saying, look, we've got X number of dollars for secondary or English as a second language, and we've got to use that money. You know, we have certain parameters. We can kind of skirt the edges by going out to here. But if we don't use all of the money this year, then they'll trim the budget on us for next year. And,
right, which
and,
they should.
And, you know, well, I know, I understand. And so, you know, it was, now on the other hand, you know, where we had shortages, where we actually needed additional funding, but we didn't have it, you know, it was frustrating to be in a situation where you had all this money designated over here that wasn't needed, and where you had real needs, you know, for resources and so forth, you didn't have the ability to be able to do that, and you couldn't take what was here and move it over to where it actually was going to make a difference. But I hear what you're saying. All right. Let's move on to the next one. Next on the list, congressional redistricting.
In this regard, they actually had said that. That was another case from a different. I think it's Louisiana, if I'm not mistaken. And I believe it was Louisiana, and they sent the redistricting map back to Louisiana, indicating that the map that they had was not, in fact, did not recognize the appropriate distribution of the demographics of the state. And so they wanted to break it up and say that they had to put together a second majority minority district in Louisiana that didn't exist. This is too bad because the courts are not well placed to do such a thing, that to get into such minutia. I think that was a shame. I think they did right when they overturned a good section about 10 years ago of the Voting Rights Act, and now they've stuck their nose back into some place where they said they were going to get out of it.
All right, next up, Christian Designer. Supreme Court seemed receptive to arguments on December 5th, 2022 by Christian Web Designer, who said Colorado's law forcing her to create websites to celebrate same-sex weddings infringes on her constitutional rights. Although the court has become increasingly protective of religious freedoms in recent years, those nonetheless say the court's embrace of those freedoms comes at the expense of LGBT individuals. At the hearing, 303 Creative versus Alanis, the Biden administration backed the law.
Yeah, Colorado can't seem to understand the law. Colorado keeps coming back, even though they keep losing at the Supreme Court, on basically First Amendment grounds that says you cannot compel speech. It's one thing. There's two sides of the First Amendment. One is that you're free to say what you want. The other one is that the government cannot make you say something that you don't want to say. But Colorado has no compunction about saying, oh, no, we don't care what the Supreme Court says. We're going to continue on this path where we're going to try and compel compliance with what we think people should say. It's almost a thought police approach,
right?
And there's no reason to believe that the court will not continue on the same path as Master Cake and whatnot. That says they, you know, it's one thing when you're offering a general service to the public, right? That says, you know, you got a restaurant and somebody comes in, they want to order a meal, and you go, I'm not gonna serve you because you're black or because you're gay or this or that. That's one thing. But it's a different thing that if you offer a service to the public that includes you making a statement that is using artistic talents, whether it's creating a web, whether it's creating a website, or whether it's creating a cake design, you are now participating in the message that this individual wants to send.
Right.
And in which case, that's clearly unconstitutional. It's clearly compelled speech by the government. And there's no reason to believe that the Supreme Court will not slap Colorado around again for the third or fourth time in the same subject area.
And of course, of note there is that the Biden administration, when it says back the law, they're backing the Colorado law that attempts to force your speech. So right. And they have made it very clear that their intention is to shove this agenda down our throats. And, you know, they're on the side of Bud Light.
They want to make you agree. Having some Bud Light in anticipation of 4th of July or whatever. I don't think they celebrate 4th of July, frankly, but that's a separate question.
Well, yeah, something else. All right. Christian postal worker. Justices seemed receptive on April 18th to arguments of an evangelical Christian mail carrier who quit the U.S. Postal Service after it refused to accommodate his wish not to work on the Sunday Sabbath. The case is Groff versus DeJoy. Thoughts?
Yeah, well, for many, many years, of course, he was off on Sundays. They were able to accommodate that, and that was the tradition. But apparently now, of course, the Postal Service has a deal with Amazon to do fulfillment for Amazon over the weekends. And so the Postal Service made a different deal, and the Postal Service started doing services on the weekends that the weren't part and parcel of this man's job for most of his career. And they essentially said, well, if you don't want to work on Sundays, then you don't have to work at all. And I believe that they're going to come down on his side for a couple of reasons, not the least of which is that was not a condition of his employment for all the time that he's been employed. And for them to now change the rules because they made a different deal. And my goodness, it's the Postal Service. You don't think they've got somebody that's willing to work on Sunday to make overtime or time and a half? It's insanity. It's insanity because, of course, the general rule from the courts is that the state needs to make the state or the government needs to make a reasonable accommodation. And so if this guy's already working 5 days a week, the rest of the week, and they have other workers that are going to fulfill their agreement with Amazon over the weekend, it's insanity to say that they have to fire this guy because he won't work on Sunday.
Yeah, it would seem that way. It would seem that way. All right, let's see. There's another one that came up, and it's on the front page of the SCOTUS blog. Court narrowly interprets ban on encouraging or inducing immigrants to remain unlawfully in the United States. On Friday, the Supreme Court issued its decision in United States versus Hansen. The question before the justices was whether a federal law that criminalizes encouraging or inducing an immigrant to come or remain in the United States unlawfully violates the First Amendment's guarantee of the freedom of speech. The court narrowly interpreted the law to avoid the First Amendment concerns that would be raised if encouraged or induced were given their ordinary conversational meanings and include meanings such as influence, encourage, or inspire with hope, as the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit had held they did. The opinion shed light on the newer justices' views on the freedom of speech and the direction the newly reconfigured court may be pushing First Amendment law. So Hansen challenged the constitutionality of the ban on encouraging or inducing immigration. He relied on a First Amendment doctrine known as the overbreadth doctrine, which allows a defendant to whom a law can be constitutionally applied to nonetheless challenge it as unconstitutional if the law makes a substantial amount of protected speech illegal, so that uncertainty about the scope of the law may chill protected speech.
Yeah, there's that overbreadth doctrine has got a long, long history dating back to many, many years where they were encouraging guys to burn their selective service cards and say that you know, folks in opposition to the draft. It's basically been interpreted, those kinds of things have been interpreted, that it's one thing to talk about breaking the law, then it's another thing to talk about probably giving people the opportunity or the methods by which they can, in fact, do so. And so assisting somebody in the breaking of the law is a bit different than talking about the breaking of the law. But you can interpret this narrowly, and in upholding the law, they interpreted narrowly what it meant to encourage somebody to break United States law. And to that extent, that if your encouragement includes some sort of overt act beyond the speech, then you're still breaking the law.
All right. We'll have to keep an eye on that and see how that progresses. Usually those kinds of cases end up coming back up in different forms.
To kind of test
the waters. All right. We got about 10 minutes left. Let's get into what you were talking about regarding the release of that recording that was put out regarding President Trump and I guess the indictment piece. Now, the only recording that I was aware of was the one where he was sitting around talking with some individuals and made reference to some document that supported his position on whether or not they should or should not have taken an action or should take an action with regards to a particular military situation.
Regards Iran.
Right.
In particular. And that's there's a recording that CNN released a few days ago. And many people have been saying, well, this is a smoking gun in terms of President Trump's intent and knowledge of the documents that were involved in the seizure at Mar-a-Lago that are the subject of the indictment in Florida. The truth is that this recording, for anybody that's listened to it, there's a couple of things about it. One apparently is that it took place in Bedminster, New Jersey, from my understanding. And two is you hear some shuffling of papers in the background, like he's showing something or whatnot. Of course, we don't know what those papers are, in fact, involved. We don't even know what those are. And three, we have no idea, and there's no relationship that we know of to Florida. I was talking about this with some folks yesterday, and the fact is everybody that's saying this is some sort of smoking gun related to the Florida case, there's a couple of problems with that. When you want to get in a recording or a photograph or some other kind of documentary evidence in a courtroom, you have to do what they call lay a foundation. In terms of laying a foundation, you have to have a human testify that either they're the ones that made the recording or they were a participant in the recording, they're familiar with the contents, and that the recording fairly and accurately represents what took place at that particular point in time. At this moment, only information that's always been presented is it says staffer number one, staffer number two. We have no idea who the participants are in this thing. We don't know the source of this matter. There's huge foundational problems when it comes to that. Then second of all, the government will, if they try to get this in evidence, they're going to try and say, well, this goes to the intent and knowledge of the president as to the status of classified documents. And of course, his lawyers will say, we don't know that what's relevant is not his general intent or general knowledge of classification law, but rather the relationship of this recording to the documents that are specifically involved in the Florida case. So you have the relevancy argument besides the foundational argument. And then there's every reason to believe that this recording will never see the inside of a courtroom, and no jury that will be deciding, if it ever gets to a jury, no jury would ever be deciding on the basis of this recording the situation of the documents in Florida. So while it is quite overblown, the other situation is that they've said that President Trump's been quoted as saying this recording exonerates him. I would suggest that what it exonerates him for is that in the aftermath of the election and the run up to January 20, there was all these things going around coming out of Pelosi's office that Trump is considering some sort of war and doing some crazy things and whatnot. It appears as though General Milley created a war plan for Iran, sent it to Trump unsolicited, that Donald Trump never asked for any kind of war plans for Iran, but they're trying to paint him as some sort of crazy warmonger. And Trump is in a private conversation saying, look at this, Milley was trying to set me up with this stuff, and I never asked for this. And this was in a private conversation. And to the extent that this overcomes the argument that Trump was trying to be a crazy person, run up to a war with Iran, it does, in fact, exonerate him as to that particular political attack. So since this is never going to, I don't believe we'll ever see the inside of a courtroom for any number of reasons that I just discussed, mm-hmm. There's a fair probability that this was released knowing or illegally leaked, knowing that it would never see a courtroom, and the idea is to poison the potential jury pool,
right,
and right. The American people from a political standpoint that he's a guilty person. And of course, the only thing it really did in the end was call attention to Anthony Weiner's laptop, some of the perverted stuff that was found on Weiner's laptop. I've seen all kinds of conversation about Anthony Weiner, Huma Abedin, and Hillary Clinton since the release of that, because Trump is referring to, I know, during the course of this, can you believe all the stuff that was on Anthony Weiner's laptop? and so the conversation, I think the release of this thing is going to backfire on the people who intended to release it.
All right. Religious liberty is really a big deal right now. And there's, I mean, there's a lot of, you know, you have the guy in I forget what state he was in. Was it Pennsylvania? He was on the street and there was one of those pride parades, and he was holding a sign that just basically said, "Hey, God loves you, but he doesn't love your sin." And the police, you know, grabbed him and arrested him for saying that he was, you know, inciting whatever. It seems as though if you espouse a biblical worldview, you're getting targeted by both you know, certain police actions as well as social media. Where's this go? Do you? I mean, you know, we talked about a couple of these cases today. Where does this go, David?
Yeah, this is a very, very dangerous situation that we're in these days, where they're working to literally suppress people's speech, and that's the ultimate in protection of the First Amendment, and that is political speech. And that man's statement there was political speech, and it's not incitement. He's not asking anybody to riot. He's not telling people to attack folks at the parade. He's not encouraging anybody to break the law. He's just expressing his opinion. And because it's a not favored opinion under those circumstances, you know, it would be like arresting somebody at a 4th of July parade that's waving a flag for the restoration of the Soviet Union. There would be no difference in that. And that would be just as illegal to arrest a fellow that's waving the old flag and saying restore the Soviet Union and make Illinois a constituent republic of the Soviet Socialist Republic. Although many people in Illinois might think that was a great idea.
Tongue in cheek, sort of.
Sort of, kind of. But the fact is that this is dangerous. That's the bait. That's why the country was created. That's why these folks left England and actually why they left the Netherlands after having left England. Yeah. And then they came over here to be able to express themselves and exercise their religion. This was the problem with the whole Obama approach to that. The whole Obama approach to that was, oh, you can have your religious liberty as long as you do it within the four walls of the church.
And then it became within the four walls of your house. You can have those opinions as long as you do it, but as soon as you step on your front porch, you better abandon those thoughts. You can't carry them with you and take them to your car or go to work with them or be thinking about God in any way, shape, or form outside of your house and, I guess, the church. Those are the only two places. So in between, you need to empty your mind. Otherwise, we're going to know. It's insanity. Well, we got to keep fighting back. We've got to keep fighting back. David, thank you so much. Shostakis.com. A great way to fight back is to go to Shostakis.com and pick up the Constitution, his writings on the Constitution, and also the writings on the Declaration of Independence. And those two are intertwined. You cannot separate one from the other. They are congruent. And it is important for us to understand how they speak to each other, constitutional soundbites and the Declaration of Independence.
Creating the Declaration of Independence, I encourage everybody, they can get it on a one day shipment. You can have it before the 4th of July, and then you can go and on the 4th of July, open it up. And go to the paragraph that says, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, and read those 55 words. That's what we should be doing on the 4th of July. And I would encourage folks to, in fact, get that book, get it between now and the 4th of July, and share it with your friends and neighbors when you go to your barbecue.
All right, we got to jump. We'll be back. Hour number two coming up right after this brief break.